You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. Leaving work in a mood? Time to change that with Overdrive.
Come October, I need surgery on both of my shoulders. That is when I'm doing it.
No, do it in the summer when you're
off. No way.
I came in after I had knee surgery. Meniscus replacement. You know, I took a week. I'll give you a week.
You know what we'll do?
Are you going to come in like the full body cast?
He'll be Hannibal Lecter. We'll wheel him in.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
I like that. Rambling intro. I like it.
I don't mind it.
Overdrive. Jim Taddy, somebody from Brian Hayes. Noodles is here. O-Dog's gone across to the TV side for a bit.
Doing a little Sports Center hit. He'll be back.
Yeah.
Maybe. He likes the lollygag. Yeah, it is a long ways away. He usually drives to that studio and drives
Wait a minute. He drives across the park? Really?
He does. Well, he doesn't have the John Daly golf cart.
I was going to say, I would expect that, knowing how O-Dog works and canvases for things, that there would have been some sort of a O-Dog shuttle.
There should be.
Yeah, I'm disappointed with that.
Shuttle bus for O-Dog. You pick him up right outside Overdrive, take him right over to Studio 6.
Sure.
To do his panel hit, and then come right back. Wait for him.
Makes sense to me.
I would do that.
You know, he weaseled his way into a parking spot.
Yeah, he's got his own parking spot.
Yeah. They took the sign down, however.
They did. The sign was a little bit... I feel like you made that. Were you a part of that?
No, I would not. No, that's not me.
Because it was a little... I thought it cut a little deep.
It did, yes.
For people who don't know what the sign looked like, it was... Wasn't it a baby?
It was some sort of an angelic...
Angelic baby.
Yeah, which is hard to imagine.
But. And it just said Jeff O'Neill on it. Or O-Dog or something. Yeah. But yeah, they took that down.
Gone. It's actually over in our prep area.
HR probably took it down.
No, and they didn't dispose of it, so it might reappear at some point.
We'll bring it back, yeah.
Yeah, April Fool's, or maybe we could put it in the seat.
Exactly. We should.
Maybe
should
the grappler could go get it and put it in the seat.
As a prop, we'll bring it down.
That's right. The Blue Jays struggling, have the day off, and not doing well lately. In fact, in the homestand that was... they continue on against Chicago tomorrow night, but against Minnesota, they lost 8-0, 3-0, and 9-1. So they were outscored 20-1 in three home games, and not much in the way of anything to be happy about there.
I feel bad for the kid, too, because all eyes are on him, and he's just... it's not happening for him right now.
No.
Vladdy Guerrero Jr. is just... he's had a tough time transitioning. Now, he hasn't had any help from his teammates, but... You know, it's an individual sport getting up to the bat. Like, him versus the pitcher.
It is, but it's a difficult rebuild when you have one or two pieces or a handful. I mean,
right.
You need more than that. I don't know that there's a structure there to make that work. It's the rebuild for baseball can be painful.
And it looks like it's going to be for the Blue Jays. My thing, though, is if he's a guy who's been destroying every level he's been at, and he's got to the major league level, and he's struggling this heavy. I mean, he is getting contact, but there's no home runs, a lot of strikeouts. I don't think they'd send him back down, but there's got to be some sort of... Maybe this day off is good for him, just to have a reset.
Well, actually, those are some of the words that Charlie Montoyo, the manager, said after the loss last night, and he added in some... Well, descriptives. Let's listen.
We didn't play good the last 3 days, so I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for this and that because we didn't play good baseball. And my kids know it. I know it, so I'm not going to insult your intelligence by saying, oh, we did this and we did that. We did not freaking play good baseball the last 3 days. We got hit. We didn't hit. So it was not very good. But thank God tomorrow's the day off, and here we freaking go. You know, we're going to keep working hard at it. So, you know, that's all I got.
Yeah, so the F-bomb appeared.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't like. I like the guy's honesty, but my only concern would be. So here we are, early stages of May, and you've already trotted that out. The honest assessment. Where do you go by the end of June when it's worse?
That's the hard part. Now he's out there trying to draw a little bit of attention away from the team.
Sure, I get
you
that.
Drop a few F-bombs or the word friggin'. He dropped that.
Two frigs and one F-bomb.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could tell he's trying to shield his troops, but it is tough when you are in a rebuild and it hasn't gone well for the coach to actually have to come out and say that this early in the season. You're right, like halfway through the season, all these speeches and post-game scrums are all going to look like a broken record.
Well, I mean, you're basically speaking 162 times.
Right.
And I don't...
More than that, probably before the game sometimes,
well,
too.
Well, yeah, sure, pre-game, but post-game, 162 times. And if you sort of go down a road, I'm not criticizing him. I thought he had a happier look on his face. He wasn't, like, upset.
Yeah.
But I don't know where this story goes. And you know, I think it's interesting that if you sort of spin this back to the hockey and you look at where St. Louis was.
Yeah.
And it's easy when you're on the outside, certainly if you're not in the dressing room. And you could speak to how it's like in the dressing room, but I mean, most people are still positive about
right.
that things could happen. Sometimes they don't know how it's going to happen or where it's going to come from. But I believe if you're an athlete, you really can't throw the towel in because bad things could happen there.
Not at all.
And so everything's just a game away from turning around. Having said that, I don't think you help it by being sort of pointed with your analysis, although I'll give him a pass on a one-off here.
Yeah, it has to be a one-off. If he's saying this five times in a month, it just falls on deaf ears. But if you're, you know, I've been on rebuilding teams, I was on an expansion team, and I've been on good teams. You always, as a pro, have to prepare. It frustrates me sometimes when I hear fans say, well, the players have quit on the coach.
Well, how would you know that?
Well, yeah, not once in a dressing room did I ever be like, I'm not playing tonight, or guys aren't going to play well tonight because we hate the coach. If you dislike the coach, I understand. We all understand. You're not best friends with the coach. Like, to this day, I think I've had some great coaches, Al Arbor, Jacques Lemaire, Daryl Sutter. You know, you go Joel Quenneville. Not best friends with any of them. My acquaintance, Todd McClellan, I had too. Like, am I acquaintances with them? Do I respect them more outside the game? Absolutely. But I never once was like, okay, to hell with that guy. I'm not preparing for this game tonight. I don't care how it goes. You're a pro. You're getting paid a lot of money, and you have an ounce of pride in you. Like, it's people say, well, you try less. Not once did I ever try less in a game. Did I have less success? Absolutely. But it wasn't from a lack of effort. And you know, for him to come out and say, yeah, we haven't played well, I agree. And I think it's not a one-off, because he's going to have to say it again at some point this season because they're just not playing well. But how deep is that team? Like, how many games did you think the Blue Jays were going to win coming into this season? With that roster, even though Vladdy was coming up, they certainly are looking to turn things around. Like, would somewhere in the 70s be fair for you?
Well, I wasn't optimistic at all, and I haven't been for the last couple of years. I just, you know, it's the great thing about baseball is that you're in that division with Boston and the Yankees, who spend like crazy, and unless you're prepared to do the same thing, right. It's not going to work for you. I mean, sorry that's just the way it is, and they reversed. They were starting to do that, and then they changed courses. They have been. I would have accused them over the years of trying to win and develop players at the same time, which is difficult
right.
to do. I think you do one thing. You're either all in or you're not.
Right.
But where they are now, this is going to take a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we could project where the Leafs would be age-wise when they finally win a cup. How old would Mitch and Austin be at that time when they finally win a cup? You want to ask yourself, how old will Vlad Guerrero Jr. be when the Jays are competitive again?
Man, it's 5 years from now? Like,
if you're lucky. I think in baseball, if you're lucky.
I don't... It depends on pitching, obviously, and hitting. But if you have some players, and they've got Bichette, potentially, that I know he's injured, but he looks like he's going to be a player. They've got some guys, but Vladdy Guerrero right now, I see the promise, but sure. I don't see anything. So, yeah, you know, if he cracks a dinger tomorrow and gets some confidence going, maybe the team does turn a little bit, and there is that secondary support.
Well, you know, for him, I mean, because of the state of the rest of the team, there's no place for him to hide.
Right.
So when he goes, I mean, they do a CSI on how to pitch to this guy, and there's nobody to sort of shield him.
Right.
So
it's not like there's four deep and they've got to worry about.
Yeah, he's not in murderer's row here. So right. Guess what? Let's just zero in on this guy.
Well, they are.
It's difficult.
They are zeroing in on him, and he's struggling. Like, there's no hiding it. Like we thought he was going to come up and be a difference maker, and maybe they would gain some momentum off of him coming up. Fans are excited, but I'm looking at the attendance. It's 12,000, it's 15,000, and you know, you're excited to see him. For me, I still tune in because I want to see how they're doing, but I also want to see him. Like I want to see him have some success or what he's going through. I think it's just a matter of time, but you know, easier said than done, because now you're starting to get into, okay, he's played 10 games. Like, it hasn't, not, it's not just 2 games, now it's 10. I think by the time he's 20 games in, this conversation will be a moot point, and maybe he has a few dingers and gets some confidence, but it just doesn't look good right now because of the statistically it hasn't been good.
Yeah, these are not, this is not an overnight thing. This is a slow developing story, which is kind of why I am thrilled to be part of the Raptors broadcast. You know, for me, this is a real interesting run just because they've had the growing pains. They've drafted well. They've achieved during the regular season at a rate that you couldn't have predicted with consistency over the last 4 years. And so then they finally rolled the dice and moved some people out. And, you know, that game five win for me was a complete one-off. Certainly the best playoff win in Raptors history. But the way that came together for me was fun to watch, because that's what it was all about. You know, right. at the end of the day, you could say they made all those moves so that this could happen. And at some point, I don't know when it is for the Leafs, next year, the year after, but at some point the Leafs will do that, and then you could look at a series win and say that's what they needed to do.
I think the frustration from the Leaf fans right now is you look at the Muzzin trade, and people thought, okay, Kyle was proactive before the deadline and went and got his guy to help shore up the D. So, you know, did we predict that Jake Gardner's back was really going to be wonky? You know, Travis Dermott takes a big hit and his shoulder is separated or whatever needs to be done as far as repairing. Callie Rosen takes a shot on the foot. Ozhiganov just never settled in. Just never. The guy's gone back to the K. He's a one and done, unfortunately. Zaitsev, he was a very polarizing guy, Jim. For me, there were nights where I watched him and I was like, this guy is just not there. He's missing passes. I don't think he was very hard to play against. But then, you know, I checked the analytics, and well, this guy's, you know, his numbers or underlying numbers were good. So then you'd get the online community that would back him and say, well, it's not him, it's his partner, and that, to a point, that could be believable. But you're looking at product. I remember calling a game between the benches, and I've got a great view. Zaitsev has the puck. He's got a clear lane to hit somebody, but he's tentative with the puck. That lane closes up. He just chips it up. And I'm thinking, you know, if somebody who's playing a lot more confident game, he finds that lane and away they go. And they go on the offense, because when your team is constructed like that, you want mobile defensemen and you want to get the puck into the hands of skilled forwards. And the D, most nights, were unable to do that because the template to beat the Leafs or to play against the Leafs was to make all of them play in their own zone. Chip it behind the D. Are they going to take a hit to make a play? Are they going to shovel it around the boards? And then the guys on the half wall, those wingers, some of them aren't that big, so they're going to lose those physical battles. And you can hem them in the zone and then create chances and force pressure on the goaltender.
So that's, you know, when I said earlier the Raptors and Leafs would be comparable, that's the one issue. It's called, I don't mean to be derogatory, but a one-dimensional game plan.
Right.
So the Leafs out of the zone fast.
Right.
But what if you don't let them get out of the zone fast? Then they have a problem.
Yeah, then they're in trouble.
For the Raptors last year, it was, and for years before, DeMar and Kyle.
Right.
So if you isolate everybody, then they play what we call iso ball, and then there's no ball movement, and you can shut down the guy who's trying to carry the load. With the Raptors lineup now, that's not going
to
happen.
There's more depth, because you can go to Green.
Kawhi can just carry the team on his back. I mean, that's
right.
I mean, this guy is a top five player in the league, which is what they didn't have before. So that's sort of where I get to it with the Leafs is they have, because of their drafting, they've got a really superior collection of talent. Now they need the superior collection of chemistry.
Right, chemistry and supporting cast. I'll even go a step further. When you look at the consist, there's one thing that I look at with these four teams that are left in the playoffs: leadership.
And they play hard.
Well, yeah, work ethic, structure, and all that. But Justin Williams, captain, like leader, been there, Mr. Game 7, you know, right away. Rod Brindamore, it was even told to us by John Forslund the other day. He said the first order of business that Rod Brindamore did as a coach, he named a captain. And Forslund said that from his understanding, Brindamore didn't even let ownership and the manager know that he was naming a captain, just said, that's my captain. So San Jose, great leadership in Pavelski and Burns and Thornton. You go right down the line. It's a veteran team. They get it. So Boston, Chara. All you hear about of Boston is Chara and Bergeron.
Yeah.
You know, St. Louis, Petrangelo. You've got guys there. David Perron's even been a really good player there. Steen, like they're veteran guys and they get it. That's one thing that when I look at the Leaf lineup, they're still developing that leadership skills. Like Patrick Marleau is supposed to be a leader. He is, but in his own right, he's quiet. He leads by example. Ron Hainsey, it's tough for him to do that because, yeah, he's on the top pairing, but I don't think he's a guy to grab Austin Matthews or William Nylander and go, you know, get your ass going here. We need you.
Yeah.
That's the type of leadership that is being developed. I think Morgan Riley has it. It's unfortunate that he's just developing it along with the rest of the guys. If we were 4 years later, if Morgan Riley was 28 years old right now, I guarantee you he would be the captain and he would be that calming driving force of that group going, hey, I need more out of you on that play. And they don't have that yet.
And that's, you know, when you talk about the leadership, it's clarity on the roster.
Right.
Understanding that when it has to happen, we're going to look to this guy and he's going to sort of, with his facial expression or his play, is going to lead us. And I think if you asked Leaf fans who that is in the Leafs, it still hasn't been decided yet.
Yeah.
And that's not something where people go, it's you. It has to sort of happen on the ice.
It does. And, you know, everyone's expecting Austin Matthews will be named captain this summer. You know, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I think he's a fantastic, he's a superstar, fantastic player. Is he a guy... And has he not been named captain by the Leaf brass because they're waiting for him to grow and mature as a person and a player? Like, that's something that I don't think they're in a rush to name a captain, but it's obvious in certain situations some of that savviness from a leader was missing. And that probably has to be addressed by Kyle Dubas this summer. And I'm not suggesting go out and sign a Matt Hendricks type, which Winnipeg did and traded for him at the deadline to bring that veteran presence back into the room. But it's either by osmosis and allowing these kids to grow into it, or it's somebody in a trade that has leadership qualities. Mark Bergevin traded P.K. Subban for Shea Weber. Shea Weber was named captain, you know, right away. When Pacioretty went away, it was, hey, Shea's our captain. He's been a captain his whole career. And the dynamic of that team looked a lot different with Shea as a captain, just the way that they conducted themselves. And it'll be interesting to see how the Leafs, with that search moving forward and what they do, how the team looks after it.
Is it Austin Matthews for you?
For me, it was always Morgan Riley, and that's no slight on Austin Matthews.
Some people are built a certain way. That's all.
I see Morgan Riley as a captain every day of the week because when I look at big decisions that need to be made, Morgan's kind of been through the ups and downs of this organization so far. He's a star player now, and he handles himself beautifully in this market. Like, he's very likable. He's not shy to be honest, and. I like the way he conducts business and carries himself. That's just me. I think there are other people that would have no problem in this market with Austin Matthews getting the C because he's the best player.
Yeah, and that's an internal call based on knowing the makeup of the person and how they would embrace or shy away from the responsibility, right?
Yep, agreed. And if they see something, that's one thing that... You know, I've played with real quiet leaders. Like, Jerome McGinley would get vocal when he needed to. But he was a guy that led by example. But you knew he was in the war. Like, he was the first guy out that was like, you know, bring it on. Like, he wanted that pressure. This is a different market. Calgary is, you know, a tenth as far as the size of the fan base and how passionate they are. The fan base of the Calgary Flames are very passionate. It's just the Leaf fan base is just bigger in numbers.
Right.
So you can really see the passion from that you know, from the fans. And for me, Austin Matthews, if he can handle it, which I believe he can, it'll be a process. But I'd like to see Morgan Rielly.
Coming up next, more Hockey Talk with Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050 and TSN 2. That works, too.
Did you miss me, Tapman?
Were you, you weren't here?
So is your answer...
Yes, guy?
Or no guy?
I think it was yes, guy.
We missed you.
Yeah, we missed you. Bob McKenzie's here, our NHL Insider. Bob, how are you today, sir?
Good. Jimmy was one of the first guys to put me on TV. Back in the day.
Really?
Global sports line, baby.
Absolutely.
There you go.
Recognized talent.
Yeah.
Well,
what do you think of this?
I think...
me and Noodles.
Oh, yeah. Well, I started you.
Yeah.
Was that actually
a yes guy for you or kind of...
No. You have, as I told you at the time, you have broadcaster timing, which is rare for an athlete.
The hell does that mean, Tapman?
You have that broadcasting talent. Do you remember Bill Clement? Bill Clement used to play for the Flyers, yeah, Washington.
He does the mosquito commercial with no tarp on.
He did NBC for years.
Yep.
And I think if I put O-Dog, Bill Clement, and John Davidson, who runs the Blue Jackets, who was a great broadcaster,
yeah,
these three guys, I mean, you're talking John Madden. These are...
There you go.
These John are Madden. Rare individuals.
A rare person.
How did you come across Bobby McKenzie?
Bobby McKenzie was at the Hockey News. We needed an insider. Phoned him up. Yep, I'll be there. And he was regular. Regular contributor.
You were right. You have to pay him.
Yeah, you have to pay him.
I don't know if we did that.
Actually, you did.
Did we?
Yeah, a little
bit. You don't think he's going to show up for free, did you?
Wow. Lost my amateur status a long time ago.
he wanted to write in the world, so we couldn't mess up with his pro status.
Yeah, no, it was good to go over in Barber Green there, yeah. Global.
Yep. But you weren't like... that big of a deal back then?
Oh, no.
No.
No, wait a minute.
Starting out.
First rung on the ladder, I would say. Yeah. On the broadcast side.
Yeah, I hadn't done virtually any broadcast, but... And then I started doing a little bit of stuff at TSN around 87, but I was doing Global Sportsline before that.
Yeah, that's way back there.
Back in the day.
Way back when you were in your diaper Hanes.
Yes, guy. Now I'm just in the adult version.
That's right. Okay. So you guys went all over this offside thing last night. I'm a big fan of that people over scrutinize this so badly that maybe they move the door. I mean, what happened?
I'm not even sure the NHL explained it as well as I think they should have explained it. Because they seem to be hung up on the whole tag-up thing. Here's the bottom line for me. And Rule 83-3 kind of spells it out somewhat. On line changes and delayed offside and everything else. Landeskog's leaving the ice. The guy that comes on the ice for him, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is the guy who scored the goal.
Yeah.
Okay? So everybody in Colorado's hung up and said, did he tag up or not? And I guess you can make that case and back and forth. Obviously, the linesman who saw the video review looked at it and said, I'm not buying that as a tag up. And that was the reason, that was the rationale the NHL put out on 83-3, the first part of the rule 83-3, where it says you got to tag up, da 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 da. And that, for me, it's elementary. You can't, that guy can't be on the ice on the offensive zone entry on a delayed offside. If the guy who's replacing him is already on the ice, you can't. It's just, you see it all the time. There's so many times I see guys go to the bench in a similar situation. There was a game, I'm trying to remember which one it was. I was watching the Hockey Night guys, and it was actually Kelly Rudy who pointed it out. And I forget who it was. It was somebody they got somewhat injured, and they were going off the ice. I think it was Zadorov. Might have been Zadorov in Colorado. I can't remember. Anyways. Instead of taking a line, he was outside the blue line, and instead of taking the straight line and going in the forward door and getting the medical attention, he went down the other end, and they had an opportunity, an offensive opportunity on a stretch pass, and the guy was going a thing, and they had to blow the whistle because Zadorov was in the process of climbing over the boards or going through the other gate, the defenseman gate. And, you know, and it's an obvious offside. Now, that was obvious because The guy was coming across the ice with the puck at a time when there was somebody in the zone. But his guy had already jumped on the ice. And so, if you know, you can't be standing on the ice on a line change and your guy's already on the ice, because at some point he is going to touch the puck, and when he does, it is too many men on the ice. But in the meantime, you can't have a zone entry on a delayed offside with the guy who's not part of the play standing there. He never takes himself out of the equation just by standing by the bench.
Do you I don't remember the placement of the doors. Is that a weird one? Like, is San Jose weird?
Well, one of them's outside the blue line, and one of them's inside the blue line.
No, I know, but they're like, that's not the case in every building.
Right, I understand.
That's what
I
when I was watching that and watching the replay, I'm like, that door placement is not.
Oh yeah, that was. You're right.
That should be standard, right?
Well,
no, they're
it's not
different.
Standard.
I was actually thinking of the other one, whether it was the Zadorov play or somebody else.
Right.
But because there was one way outside the blue line and one way inside.
Right, like
the blue line,
because if. From rink to rink, there is some inconsistency as far as door placement. That's what came when I was sitting there on the couch watching it. I'm like, why is that door right on the blue line? I know sometimes it's either in or on the outside. This one was a little bit funky for me.
I always find it funny. So they go and review it and they see Landeskog on the ice.
Yeah.
Can't they just say, by the way, no goal, and it's too many men on the ice? Or goalie interference is like, oh, you ran over the goalie, so it's no goal. See, and by the way, you're getting a penalty, too.
Yeah, but he probably was off the ice by the time his guy touched the puck, or by the time Colorado touched the puck, he was, you know.
Yeah, I know, but if a guy's skating over to the boards and the puck glazes on his skate, that's too many men on the ice.
Right, but nobody had touched the. See, it gets wonky on this one because it was a delayed offside.
Yeah.
Because the puck was thrown into the zone and it was in no man's land. And so you couldn't call too many men on the ice because Colorado hadn't touched the puck enact too many men on the ice. And until they do, you can't say it's too many men.
And lost in all this, it was a turnover in the neutral zone too.
Yeah.
Like that's what led to this. It was a quick transition turnover by a back pressure play. So Landeskog is kind of lollygagging up the boards, yeah. And he's standing at the gate.
Yeah.
He just doesn't jump. Like he's kind of like...
If he'd been able to get both feet off the ice quick enough, it would have been perfectly
exactly.
Fine.
I like working with Bob because he knows, he Googles the rule and looks up the rule, or he knows the rule, and then I'll see, he'll be like, that's no goal because of this. And then I'll see the visiting or the coach that the infraction, he'll start arguing. I'm like, you're a dummy. You don't even know the rule. Why are you arguing? It's no goal.
It's nice to work with people that know what they're talking about.
I'm far from right all the time, but when I see Landeskog standing there and I know there's a player that's come on the ice for him, and he's not off the ice, and they're making the zone entry on a delayed thing. I'm like, you can't just stand there in the you can't stand there in the offensive zone and just be invisible. It's not allowed.
You know how I knew that was going to come back is, it's a ballsy call to call it too. Like you're going to lose your it's a penalty, is it not? If they miss that,
it's
a penalty. To challenge it, it's a penalty.
Sure.
I right away, I'm like, they saw something we didn't pick up,
sure,
right away.
Sure, because then it's 2-2 and you're killing the penalty.
Exactly. Yeah. And you've lost a little bit of momentum.
Which actually happened anyway, wasn't it? Didn't they get a penalty?
No, they got a penalty afterwards. Eric Karlsson got a penalty a couple of minutes later.
That's where the video guy is really under the gun.
Playoff big time.
Situation, absolutely. Game 7, and you call in and say, call that off. Like, it's one of those things, you have to have it right. As one of my friends used to say, not you, non-negotiable.
Right.
You know what? You know,
thanks, buddy.
I was thinking about this on the way home last night, too. If I was an organization, and especially if you're an organization like the Leafs or somebody that's got lots of coin, I think I would hire a referee, an ex-referee and an ex-linesman just to be part of the organization. And just be sitting there with the video guy. Because, I mean, one call, if you get it to go the right way for you because these guys know the rules. Because even a video guy... He's going to know what he sees, but he might not know all the nuances of the rules. I'd almost want, you know, I know lots of networks obviously have former guys. You know, especially in the NFL, they've made a...
But wasn't that referee in the NFL always wrong?
I don't know.
Like, didn't it go to... They would go to the guy, like, wherever it was. If it was Fox or whatever, let's go to the former referee. And he would say, this is not a catch because of this. And, call on the field...
It's a catch.
And they'd go back. But you're right. Like, I would, if I'm the Leafs... The Leafs have... There's no salary cap off the ice. They've spent a ton of money as it is. If you're a wealthy organization, why not have people like that in your war room, in your video room, helping out? Because it's just another resource.
Well, and they do send people around to tell, you know, they send the instructional video about, here's what we're going to call. But if you had somebody reinforcing that as it's tweaked during the year, that would be relevant, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And even pre-scouts, I mean, okay, these are the guys reffing the game tonight. These are the guys doing the lines. These are what their tendencies are in terms of what they call. And
That website, Scouting the Refs,
it's good.
Is fantastic. Now, I just got put onto it kind of later this year, and I watch it all the time because it's the records of the refs and where they
and what they
against
exactly.
the teams, and it's very interesting. It's very in depth, and I don't suggest that the refs just have it out for certain teams, but there are
they call it a certain way, right?
Coincidentally, against certain teams, it just it may not be that type of refs game, so they end up calling more. But it is fascinating to see. You know, it's a great website. And you know, if you have those type of resources, I know we have Kerry Fraser call in, and you know, he's very active on Twitter now.
Yeah,
he's very active on Twitter, talking about plays and what he would have done and positioning.
I don't know why he bothers. People just yell at him and say, it's just painful.
Well, Leaf fans go after him because of what, 93, right? Is it 93?
Yeah. The stick, the Gretzky.
You see, if they had instant replay back then for majors, then... Who knows? Maybe the Leafs would be cup winners.
I just thought with all the scrutiny, because you know, the NHL likes to look at these things, and that's a nuance for the building, maybe where that door is. And, of course, where the doors are is set up by the space between the benches. And there's so many buildings that, like, buildings have been new for, what, 25, 30 years? They're all sort of different, but they like to keep everything standard, right?
Yeah.
What about, I mean, I've thought of this before, just because of a safety situation, guys should be able to just hop over. Like, doors not... I know, like, I watched a guy, Chris McAlpine, who's an agent now. His career almost ended because he was going up the wall with the puck, and he went to dump it in, and our trainer thought he was changing, so he opened the door, and he got ran into the corner of the door. It was
a bunch of them. But Brian Burke, when he was a general manager of the National Hockey League, campaigned for years that the rule should be that the doors don't open during play.
Well, see, Landeskog would have jumped over. He would have, his feet would have been in the air.
And that, so if a guy's injured, I guess, obviously. But nevertheless, Berkey's idea was, as long as play is ongoing, those doors stay shut and you hop off or hop on. And I don't have a problem with that.
Why was it shut? Like, I don't understand the logic of why that would be shut down.
I'm not sure, other than, you know, do they think they're creating another safety hazard by guys having to vault over and skates coming up?
Or maybe
somebody's hand gets sliced.
You know, if a guy's got a leg problem, he's going to hop over the boards?
No, he's saying at the whistle. But yeah, I guess. You're right. I'm sure there's always going to be a counter argument. But, you know, I don't know. I'd be an advocate of at least shutting him down. That way a guy knows he has to jump.
Craig and Pooley, Bob, were talking in the last couple of days about how it's the season of people being upset with their organizations. Everyone's kind of in war rooms now discussing the disappointment. A lot of teams had expectations. I think I ask you this every spring. Do you expect a lot of change, a lot of movement, or teams just, they got to settle down and kind of
sift
through things?
I think we've seen already, you know, most of the coaching changes have happened. There's still some hires to be had, but to your point, I mean, you know, I heard you guys talking earlier about San Jose. What would have happened if they got rinsed in the first round? You know, what kind of changes do you feel like you need to make, and how much does that change things? I'm sure that there are some organizations that are gonna, you know, I'd heard for a while, you know, Calgary at various times has talked about sort of reloading their defense. Sometimes you hear TJ Brody's name in trade talk, or Travis Hamonic or whatever. They've got some good young guys there. Rasmus Anderson really came on strong there, and that. But I didn't center Calgary out because I think that they're you know, at the forefront of what you just talked about, O, but, you know, what's Nashville going to do? We've already got the P.K. Subban, Kyle Turris, you know, what are they going to do with those two guys? So I suspect between now and the draft, this is probably the last 2 or 3 weeks where it's not front and center news. As soon as we get into the Stanley Cup final, it's almost like, okay, what are the other 29 teams doing? Got the draft coming up. You got free agency coming up. Who's staying? Who's going? What big moves are going to get made? And how significant are they? So trying to think off the top of my head if there's anybody. But, you know, obviously new general manager in Edmonton. We'll see how quickly they get active. I just think there'll be lots of big names mentioned as in play. And, you know, Chuck Fletcher's going to be busy in Philly. He wants to get a top two-line center. He wants to get a top four defenseman. He's willing to give up some of his kids or draft picks. Not all the kids. A lot of them are untouchable. But, I can see lots of organizations making all sorts of moves here.
Who do you think, with all the coaches that have been hired recently, that Edmonton could be targeting as a possible?
Dave Tippett. I think that's the. I think Kenny Holland has probably got 4 to 5, maybe 6 names that he's going to look at. And over the next 3-4 weeks, I think he'll do the interviews and sit down. But I think the one that makes the most sense to me at this point is Dave Tippett. And I think Tip wants to get back in and coach. He's been with the Seattle expansion group. But he's talked to Buffalo Sabres on a couple of occasions about their vacancy. And I get the feeling that under the right set of circumstances, Dave Tippett would like to be back behind an NHL bench as a head coach sooner rather than later. And he might fit the profile. I think he does fit the profile of a potential impact coach, veteran guy who can come in and is not going to be awed or overwhelmed by anything that he would deal with when he walks into Edmonton and whatever shortcomings, and might be the kind of head coach that, okay, we're not as good defensively as we should be. Well, they've typically
clean that up.
A pretty buttoned down guy when it comes to team defense. And
he's got a real good temperament too. I think that's something. I mean, you know, Hitch came in and Hitch was making these, you know, give me Puljujärvi. It's going to, you know, I'm going to turn him into a player. It's going to take 9 days to him. Remember Hitch said it's going to take 9 days to get the system up and play and yeah, we'll be fine. Like, I think he realized he was in over his head there. Or, no, that's the wrong word. What he realized.
Yeah, there was a bigger job. Yeah.
Bigger job than what he thought it was. And, you know, Hitch is a fantastic coach. Like, that's not on coaching. That the roster was flawed.
Yep.
When you had 2,500 games of experience between Hitch and Todd McClellan, and they couldn't get it done, that's not on coaching.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that Tippett's getting the job in Edmonton, but I think he's a leading contender who Kenny Holland's going to really want to talk to. And there'll be other guys, too. But I think in this instance, my guess is the more experience is likely to be a positive thing.
Bob, thanks very much.
Thanks, fellas.
Bob McKenzie, TSN Hockey Insider at TSN Bob McKenzie's the Twitter account. Remember to head over to Amsterdam Brewhouse in Queens Quay, TSN 1050's playoff headquarters. Coming up next, best bets. Overdrive continues on TSN 1050 and TSN 2. Segment for a Thursday. Jim Taddy subbing for Brian Hayes. He'll be back tomorrow. And basketball tonight on TSN 1-3-4, 5 and 4K. Game 6. Raptors and Sixers, what do you think?
We don't ever mention the 4K on the show. Is that a little something additional you do?
Yeah. A little side, so I supplement my income. They say if you say 4K.
Action?
They've told me if you say 4K, there's an extra $50 in it for you. So.
Nothing wrong with that. You look good in 4K, too.
Well, there you go.
That's what it is.
Do we want to do this? Time now for the best bets brought to you by Proline. Taking the home plus between the Bruins and Canes. And taking the visiting Raptors to win over the Sixers in Philadelphia tonight. And finally, the home plus is I expect the Trailblazers to dominate against the Nuggets tonight. Throw 20 on that. I get all three right. You get $236. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. You can get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. Proline, get way into the game.
Whoa.
Whoa.
You've been good, Tat, man. You've been good.
I tried. It's a different show that I'm used to. I'm not used to the two amigos over here. Usually it's one-on-one. So this is a kind of diversified energy.
Yeah, but I like that because usually the one-on-one, it's just guns blazing.
Oh, it's relentless. By the end of the show, you just see it. Bye.
Well.
Yeah, we probably will do that anyways because that's how Old Dog and I get along.
Go home, buddy. You know the routine, right?
That's right. The White Hanes.
Yeah. You're down.
Yeah.
Lie down and play your music.
Yeah.
What's slow the rock?
I think I might have to do some Argent tonight. Hold your head up. I think I might do the Argent album.
Old school.
Oh, yeah. 71, 72. Oh, yeah. Great organ. Rod Argent.
What about...
I had to correct that.
Come on. Is that your... that's your organ sound?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of a unique sound. No, not too many people relied on the Hammond organ that much, but he did. Anyway, I should remind everybody, if you're listening to First Up tomorrow, Landsberg and Koliakovo will announce a very important playoff keyword. You'll want to remember it when you're listening to Overdrive later that afternoon. Brian will give you the cue to call. Be the first one through with the correct keyword, and you could be headed to a potential Raptors 76ers Game 7. Courtesy TSN 1050. That'll be Sunday night. And if there is a Game 7, we will have it right here.
You'll have the pre and post.
That's
right,
I will.
Full edition of Yes Guy.
No Guy.
Actually, I don't do that on the Raptors.
Why?
Because I'm not the regular host.
So what? So bring your...
I don't like to step on any toes.
You know what I think about you not being the regular host?
No Guy.
There you go. Thank you very much. Your support has been relentless over the years, and I appreciate it.
We're going to fight for you to bring Yes Guy, No Guy to the Raptors broadcast.
I'll write on a piece of paper.
If we decide to let you use it, period.
Yeah, okay. I'll write on the back of this my rate, and you'll add to it to look after yourselves. And
all good.
There you go.
Be all good.
Yeah. So, you like the Bruins?
Where are you at with the Raptors? You didn't give us your opinion.
I said they would win tonight.
You think they're going to win tonight?
Yes, I do.
By five, you said.
5 points. I did
two
say that.
Two possessions. That's right.
Yeah,
now
the two-possession game. Like, oh, they missed the three. The Raptors win. On to round three against the Bucks.
Giannis.
Yeah, Giannis.
Can you say his last name, Yes Guy or No Guy?
I can say it if it's in front of me, but it's not in front of me now, so.
No Guy.
No Guy.
Antetokounmpo.
That was close.
No Guy.
No, that's
not. That's not it. That's it?
And Antetokounmpo. No, Antetokounmpo.
No Guy.
Oh, come on, Guy. That was close.
And Antetokounmpo.
No.
That was close.
No Guy.
Wow. That's a No Guy.
He's just upset because he unplugged the lights.
I'm not even
trying. Try one more, Tatman.
Antetokounmpo.
That's a Yes Guy.
Oh!
Yes, sir.
Yes Guy.
Yeah, nailed it.
Work.
It only took six tries.
That's all right,
though. Hope I don't do that in the broadcast.
Well, just say
the G-Man. The G-Man. Or I'll let Dwayne Watson say
Yes Guy.
Yeah. That's it.
You have to bring Yes Guy to it.
Oh, yeah.
Dwayne
okay.
Watson.
Yeah, I don't want to kill people with that. It's kind of subliminal. That's kind of my nature.
Once a week. That's it.
Yeah.
You were good.
Get out your selfie stick when you get home and gear down and let me have noodles.
I don't want to upset. I don't want to overload the thing.
Yeah, put a video out on Twitter. It'll get a billion hits.
Yeah, the selfie stick will go.
All right. Thanks for joining us in Overdrive. Brian Hayes back tomorrow, listening on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 2.
No Guy.